The following program is for entertainment and basic informational purposes only. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of Cumulus Media, WPRV Radio, its management, or staff. This is Rhode Island's longest-running financial talk show, Money Talk with Steve Beauvais. Taking care of business and working overtime. With market insights and so much more, talk to Steve now at 437-5000 or 1-888-345-0790. This is Money Talk with Steve Beauvais.
Well, good afternoon. Welcome to the Money Talk Show. I'm Steve Beauvais, Certified Financial Planner Professional. My number is 437-5000, 1-888-345-0790. And for the next hour, I'm available if you have a challenging financial issue. We've been around a while, 25 years on the air, 38 years as a licensed financial professional, independent in mind and body and politically as well, if you're curious at all. Health care bill failed to pass today. Didn't get enough votes. Markets didn't like it. Don't like uncertainty, any kind of uncertainty. Dow Jones down 60 points to 20,596. The NASDAQ at 58.28. That was actually up a little bit, which is probably due to maybe healthcare stocks had a one-day odd reaction to that. Sometimes, folks, in the stock market, things do not react the way you would think they would. I've shared many stories with you already, and sometimes you'll be ironclad what will happen if this happens, and the opposite happens, and there's very little to explain it sometimes. I would say more times than not, things react the way you would anticipate if you're pretty experienced, but not always. Sometimes everyone is completely shocked. That was just a little guess. I didn't have time to look into it that finitely for you. Russell 2000, small company stocks. Don't talk about those a lot on the program. They're great funds for your 401k plan. For people who have long-term investments, they are one of the riskier categories. They're small companies. Small companies fail a lot more often than big companies. They also carry more debt. Interest rates are rising. Small companies are going to be hurt more than any other type as interest rates are rising because they do borrow money and to operate, you know. And so their costs are going to be going on the upside. Don't even look at them for my clients nearing retirement. We have stocks in the account, but we have nice dividend-paying stocks. Did you know that you can invest in ETFs? It's one of these new mutual funds, you know, and something that pay is a preferred stocks only. Preferred stocks are different than common stocks. What you hear about pretty much always is the common stocks. They pay little dividend, and most of the gains in the long run comes from growth, maybe, right? Dividends are... Can't say they're guaranteed, but they're predictable, and if they're not there, it's very noticeable. So dividends are proof of profitability. I love dividends. My own personal accounts earn 3% in dividends. I'm 10 years away from retirement. Some approach to that could be that's too conservative because the dividend payers are more conservative. Well, I will never forget the decade of the 2000s where the stock market had no gain. If you relied on share price gain, there wasn't any. Up and down, up and down, up and down, nowhere. Nathan and I talked the other night about it on the radio program. This is why it's better to have a portfolio, a global portfolio today. You want something outside the U.S., in my opinion. A little bit of emerging markets, a little bit of Europe. I would say still normally more U.S. than overseas. I do think the U.S. is the best stock market in the world to invest in over the long run. When I say best, let me clarify that. Ratio of risk and return. There are many other stock markets that have oftentimes have much better returns than the U.S. market, but they will tend to be followed by really, really strong down periods. I shared with you one of my actual advisor stories quite a few times about the a new mutual fund that came out many years ago, and we had one client out of the whole firm. You know, Don and I at that time were probably servicing, you know, a couple thousand customers, and only one called. And they were interested in this new Russia fund. They were from Europe themselves, this client of ours, you know. It was called the Stroika, S-T-R-O-K-I-A, Stroika, Russia Stroika Fund. And the first year it came out, it had a 96% return the first year. And the client called the office and wanted us to put it in their portfolio. And I tried very, as always, very politely and gently and respectfully to say no. After a good conversation, they grudgingly yielded and said, okay, whatever you think, you're supposed to be the expert here. So remember now, this is the fund that's up 96%. That's when the client sees it in a report somewhere, hears about it in the news, wants to buy into a fund that just went up 96% in 1 year. I said, uh-uh, that's a no-no. What do you think the 12-month return was the following 12 months? It was minus 70. So there are no ironclad predictable patterns in the financial world, but there are concepts and things that tend to, and I think it takes decades of watching, studying, learning, and making some mistakes as well to pick up on some of these things. So if you are rattled about your money, right now is a dangerous time, I think, because you're not rattled. When markets are down and values are down and people are upset and angry about it, that's opportunity. Make sure you have some cash to buy good, get good values. You'd want to buy furniture on sale, right? Would you want to buy a car on sale? If it was the same car, of course you would. But people don't buy stocks on sale. They wait till they're fully priced, because then they feel good about it. Imagine if you did that with cars. Can imagine if you were walking through a Chevrolet dealership and over the speaker came the manager saying, special sales promotion today. I'm sorry, I'm having too much fun with this. All Chevy cars, brand-new cars, today are half off. There were 20 people in the showroom that went there willing to pay full price. And the minute they hear it's half price, they all run out, get in their cars and leave, and suddenly not interested anymore. That's how people behave about the stock market. Today it's done on a more calm, and I'm glad about this, managed basis of mutual funds. I had a conversation today with one of my long-term clients, very fond of this man, talking about commissions versus fees, and he was shocked to learn that we're on the cusp of federal laws that say you can't, the person that's working, handling your investments, can't earn a commission. And it's a long, drawn-out story. I won't bore you to death with it. But I think it's a good thing. It doesn't mean that everyone that is in the financial business that works on a commission basis has done anything wrong. As a matter of fact, I'm sure it's just the opposite. The vast majority do a fine job, and it's not really a problem. But apparently, over the last, say, decade or two, there's been enough lawsuits and enough exposure to the small percentage of people in the financial business who just tell everyone they meet what makes them the most money. That's usually the person who's not career-minded. They're just doing that job because they haven't found their place yet, you know, that kind of stuff. That's why we encourage people to seek people with 10 years' experience as a minimum in our field. I think probably in the medical field, that would be a good way to screen out, you know, who you're gonna give your ear to listen to. This is the Money Talk Show on AM 790, 437-5000, 1-888-345-0790. Hey, what does the top 1% mean anymore? I was having a conversation with a client the other day. They were just chit-chatting about it. And I hadn't looked at the numbers in a while. I'm not hung up on stuff like this. But recent research indicates, IRS, that in America today, if you earn $459,000, you're in the top 1% or higher than that. In Rhode Island, it's $336,000. And then, of course, state by state, it's a little bit different. Massachusetts, you would expect a little bit higher than us. And in Connecticut, a little higher again. And if you go to the coastline states have the higher incomes, and the inner part of our country, as you get towards the center, tends to be lower incomes on average there. Might have something to do with the coastlines, access to shipping, and businesses can operate better. Of course, today it's changed a bit, and it's changing every minute, as you know. Tonight on the program, if we come back from the first break, I'm going to spend some time talking about my least favorite financial topic, but I owe it to you to do it because I haven't done it in probably a couple of years, and that's just insurance in general. I've got quite a bit of experience with insurance. I don't sell insurance. I have not earned any income from selling insurance for over 30 years. I did a little of that in the early parts of my career. I noticed if you're a financial person at 21 years old, people will buy insurance from you. Many older clients did, but they're not going to let you handle money, right? That's too young, and I agree it is too young. 10 years experience should be mandatory, I think, in the investment field before anyone can handle an account on their own. You've all met my young son, Nathan, in our office. Everything he does, I've got my eye on it every moment. It's designed by senior people with super experience. We don't let any young ones loose on our clients. Now, there's no federal laws on that. Once you're licensed and pass the test, you really, as long as you don't do anything wrong, you can just run. You know, I don't think that's a good thing. I think we need to have apprenticeship rules. which might be better than the Department of Labor rulings that are pending right now. The younger ones, the under 10 years experience, tend to get in a lot of trouble. The younger ones are under a lot of financial pressure. I mean, I remember three kids trying to save for college, a mortgage, car payments, you know, all that stuff, you know. And so it's tough. And so if you have been contacted by your financial people, many of our clients have already. Nathan's handling that project as well in my office. You actually are starting to see some ads on commercial. I saw, was it Edward Jones commercial? Excellent, excellent organization. Did a little where the client's in the car, they get a cell phone call from their broker that says, we've got to get together and discuss these new rules. That means that person was working on a commission basis with their advisor, and may not be able to do that going forward, depending on how the rules go down. We don't know for sure yet. I believe, this is just my opinion, I happen to believe that for all of you, it is in your best interest that commissions are abolished in retirement accounts. I'm in agreement with it. Because if everyone in the financial business, when it comes to your retirement account, has to get paid an asset-based fee, which means, you know, 1% a year. I've got some clients that with larger accounts that pay, 0.6. Typical might be 1%. It's a penny on a dollar. No matter what the advisor recommends for the actual investment, they get paid exactly the same because their compensation doesn't come from the investment. It comes from you. You pay them through a deduction you can clearly see on your statement. Now, a few people, as I mentioned, my very dear friend for many years, is 80 years old now. I'm almost 60. He's 80. And he doesn't like this. Yeah, I hope he's listening. I love him. But he doesn't like this. He wants to do it the old-fashioned way. And I told him we can't do it anymore. You cannot do, in my office, we cannot open an IRA account, a retirement account, and use commissions. And I think in the long run, it's much healthier for people. If you had a 25-year experience with commissions and did well with it, and that's what happened with him, because I was the advisor the whole 30 years plus, but we've been on a fee basis, you know, for quite a long time now. You know, he never really liked it. I think it's a kind of common thread amongst the generation, people that are about 80. It's so new and foreign to them, and what the problem is you're seeing the cost of having someone handle your money now. And sometimes it's actually less than you paid years ago when you had commission products like mutual funds and variable annuities. It's even less expensive than then, but it doesn't look less expensive because the old expenses were all hidden. Now, it wasn't done in a, you know, I think it's just human nature and business in general saying, you know, don't keep sticking your cost in their face. That's not a good idea. But you know what? I think we're at a point in my field where, yes, it is a good thing to do that. The customer, you, have to clearly understand what does it cost to hire me and what do I do to earn it. And I think if anybody has any trouble with that, they're the person you need to worry about in the financial business. So you're probably getting these letters or phone calls from some of your people, and it's nothing doesn't mean anything was done wrong in the past. If you had a commission account and it was handled in an honest fashion, then there's nothing wrong with it whatsoever. As usual, folks, it's not the commission isn't the problem, it's the people. In their recommendation, and what happens is they run into a situation where someone has one complaint, and so that causes a very thorough audit, maybe, of their business practices. And if you're a financial advisor and you opened 100 new accounts 5 years in a row, so that's 500 new people, all different walks of life, different ages. You don't know who walks in your office, right, or who comes to you. All different type of things, 529s, IRA, all different types of accounts over a five-year period. And they look at your pattern and say, well, isn't this a coincidence? All 500 of those people that were all different all needed the same thing, and it happens to be the thing that made you the most commission in the world. Now, those patterns are found all the time, people, in the financial business. Does the average advisor do that? Of course not. Said this 100 times, and I will say it another 100 times. The vast majority of people in the business are good folk that are trustworthy and worthy of your respect. But every industry has people in it, and when there's people in it, there's going to be a bad one hit here or there. It's just more crucial when you're talking about your money, right? I was talking with Nathan the other day about the medical field and how the worst thing I can comprehend, worse than this topic, is a doctor that would recommend a certain medication or a certain practice to you or a certain therapy based on what's best for their own wallet. And Nathan shared that with our doctor just the other day, and he said, yeah, but it still happens. and it does, meaning that it's not stopped there either. So you got to understand, people are people in general. Most people are good, I find. But when it comes to your health or your money, I think salesmen have no place in the world of healthcare and money myself. This is Steve Bovee on the Money Talk Show, and I'll be right back. Welcome back to AM 790. This is a station for talk and business. 437-5000, 1-888-345-0790. Markets were mixed today in the news of the healthcare plan was pulled due to lack of support. Lack of moral support, I guess. Onward to other things, I guess, huh? Markets don't like indecision. They don't like surprises, and they don't like uncertainty. So Dow was off just a small amount. And funny, the NASDAQ was positive. Hey, the last 2 years, there's a new index, good one too, called the Global Dow. If you want to look it up on the internet, you type in G Dow, D-O-W, Global Dow. The Dow you hear about for decades is U.S. stocks only, and it's only 30 of them. But it does give a pretty good reflection of the U.S. economy. My point here is if you have a large enough account or if you're old enough to need maximum diversification. If you're my age and you have $500,000, in my opinion, you need to have global diversification. You can't have just U.S. stocks in your account. I think that would be irresponsible and a big mistake for anyone to have that at that level. Now, if you're a young buck, like the guy I'm looking at through the glass here with the brown beard, mine's all white, that's okay for him to have S&P 500 funded his 401k plan. Just plow the money in for 10, 12, 15 years. It's a different game when you're buying all the time and adding all the time. When you stop adding and then start withdrawing, that can be psychologically very difficult. I had that conversation this week as well. A person was kind of implying to me that the account didn't make any money, and I looked down and said, you're taking $4,000 a month out, and you have as much money as you had 3 years ago. So the dividend yield and the gains kept up with the withdrawals, but because the account value, his statements didn't go up. He's implying that it didn't make any money when it made about $300,000 in 4 years. That's pretty funny. My point here is don't come to any conclusions about anything in the financial world. It's very complicated. Write down your questions and shoot them at the people that serve you, and they should be prompt and eager to answer your questions. And make sure you have a discussion about what things cost and how they get paid. One of my favorite comments is that if you understand someone's compensation, you'll understand their motivation. And another positive for asset-based management of accounts versus commissions is that the only way in the long run for the advisor to earn more, and we're all in a healthy way a little selfish. We want to take care of our family, right? Buy a nice present for the grandchild. Maybe you need a new car. And that's true of all of us. So that's okay. But in the long run, it's good to have systems in place, and that's what these pending laws are trying to do, that you don't have to rely on the honesty of the person you're talking to. The structure that they're working within prevents them, does not allow them in any way, shape, or form to behave in that selfish manner, and I'm all for it. It's about time. I think it's about time that anyone who is not anyone, but there are probably some exceptions in the financial biz, but if you're actually the lead dog on the account like I am, you have to be a fiduciary. That's just my opinion. I think that level of responsibility, that level of liability makes you take things very seriously. You better make sure you pay attention. You better make sure you're watching these accounts if that's your responsibility. And in my practice, it's every quarter, 4 times a year, and more often if needed, to do a full review of liquidity, asset allocation, dividend production. Does the client have income needs on the portfolio? How is that income going to be met the next 3-4 months? All these things are reviewed in writing in a file every quarter. That's myself anyway. Some accounts can be done every 6 months, depending on how sophisticated they are. But again, if you've seen that commercial for Edward Jones, an excellent investment company, showing a customer receiving a call from their Edward Jones advisor, telling them that we need to get together to talk about these new rules. So in the beginning, I thought for sure somebody's going to hear from their advisor in the beginning when they haven't heard it in the general news yet, and they're going to think it's another scam of some kind that the person that they're talking to is trying to jam them, But that's not the case, folks. There is actually a law pending, and it's being held up by our new president. He's not in complete agreement with it. But I hope, anyway, that eventually this does go through. And that if you have a $500,000 401k plan, and that's what's happening today, you see, a lot of people years ago had pensions. don't have pensions today. Matter of fact, almost no one in the corporate world does. And so when they retire, instead of a pension of $3,000 a month, they have to have $500,000 in a 401k plan. Now, that $500,000, at 6% will only kick out what the pension would, so it's not really worth a lot more in pure, current values. But now we have a lot of these people who, in our population, who are reaching age 65 are not financial people, and many of them have $500,000. It's a very common account. In some offices, it's small, actually. But remember, these are folks who usually don't have a pension. And years ago, you had a pension, and there's really a very similarity there. $3,000 a month pension, you'd have to have about $500,000 to match that, and control your principal. So now we have this large group of Americans having to make this decision. What do I do with $500,000? Well, not good. Not good. They're not educated in it, and I don't believe the laws are structured correctly. Commissions in financial products, I've seen them as high as 10%. So if you have a $500,000 account to roll over, and someone could, if they could get away with it, if they could make 10% on whatever it is they recommend to you, that's $50,000 just opening an account for you. And they have no further obligation to you after it's opened. So it's an hour discussion and $50,000 commission. Are you crazy? That's what I'm talking about. And again, the people who do it, most of them did it correctly. Don and I were in the commission business for many, many years, decades, but not for quite a long time now. We were of the same mindset that you're hearing here, about it all along, that we thought it would be better if we had structure, laws in the business that puts the consumer, you, in a position where nobody can ever do that. I don't think it's healthy to leave it to just anybody you bump into. I think we absolutely need this fiduciary rule or some version of it. This is the Money Talk Show on AM 790, and we'll be back.
This is Money Talk with Steve Bove, exclusively on AM 790 Talk and Business.
Yeah. Welcome back to the Money Talk Show on AM 790, your station for talk and business. Hey, what aren't you hearing in the financial biz, in the financial news out there? One of our biggest responsibilities is to figure out what you're not hearing and make sure you hear it here, right? Year-to-date, the S&P 500 up 4%. My emerging markets fund is up 16%. I talked about it all year. I know it's not a normal holding. I very seldom see emerging markets funds in client accounts. And I think for the past decade, that's been a good thing, and I didn't have them. But I introduced them into my account, into my client accounts and my own account in the last couple of years because I went back and looked. What did I do? I studied history. And with the super technology we have in software, I just made a graph. The last time interest rates rose in the United States of America was June of 2004 to June of 2006. Interest rates went up quite a bit over a two-year period, and I graphed out the markets of the world, the stock markets of the world. And guess what the worst performer was? U.S. Guess what the best performer was? Emerging markets. Here we are again in rising interest rates. S&P 500 up 4% year-to-date. Emerging markets, one particular fund that I like, up 15. Almost four times that. In the two-year period, the last time rates rose, and there's no way of knowing if it'll be that strong this time. I suspect it won't be, actually. But the last time we had rates rising like this, for the two-year period, the S&P 500 gained 10%. Europe gained 40, and the emerging markets of the world, that's when they tend to at that part of the world cycle called the global cycle of finance. When rates are rising in the very developed nations, like now, that's usually when that emerging markets takes off. And so far this year, it's playing out the way I would have thought it would. Typically, when rates are rising, you see emerging markets are the best performer, then Europe behind that, and then U.S. is usually last. And right now, emerging markets, one particular fund that I just look at here, up 15%, S&P up 4, and Europe up 7. We have the exact same order of behavior as we had the last time rates rose. Now, does it always work that way, Stephen? No. Does it usually work that way, Stephen? Yeah, usually. How do you define usually? This type of a pattern, I would say, is 80%. It will repeat. When the same things happen, sometimes the same things happen. So emerging markets, especially if you're younger and you're buying shares every week, make sure you have a little of that in your portfolio for the next 10, 15, 20 years. Something in my gut tells me that these major stock markets, Europe and the U.S., are just fully priced now. They're healthy. They're doing well. If you didn't panic and sell at the bottom, which you should never do, you didn't have losses. You've gotten your money back. Now, it's not fun, I agree. And maybe it's not the right ride for you, and you should get off. I once in a while recommend clients I have to consider CDs and close the account with me and move the money over. At some age, if it's bothering you, the volatility, you know, statement to statement, up and down. Now, older folks have more conservative accounts, but they still fluctuate a little bit, you know. I talked to a gentleman who was 80, and he was very concerned about a $10,000 movement in a $1.2 million account. Any kind of account that's $1 million is going to fluctuate $10,000, or it's not an investment, you know. And so talk to your people. Hopefully they're professional and honest enough to tell you what might be best for you. And I believe most of them would be. You know, if you're doing this for a living, you should be pretty successful. You shouldn't have to be selfish like that. And part of the give back, we always thought, Don and I, was to be that way and make sure that we do this show here. We get in here. Well, he and I still get here a couple nights a week. You'll notice we're sharing the load. And, of course, we have the youth involved. Monday night, Don Sowa, the founder of the program. Tuesday night, Don and his daughter, Donna Grace, 10-year certified financial planner. Two certified financial planners on that show that were both named last year by Rhode Island Monthly Magazine, five-star wealth managers. We got young Nathan. We're developing him along here on the show with me on Wednesdays and Fridays. I myself was also named. So last year it was all three of us. And that's just probably a sign of just experience. You know, been around a long time. 10 years experience plus is a good thing to look for when you're choosing a financial person. I'm only 58, but I have 38 years experience. Yes, I was a licensed investment advisor at age 20, believe it or not. Something that I just had a natural inclination for at a very young age. I remember my father talking about his business when I was really young. I understood it. I understood how it worked. I don't know if he's probably listening right now. I may even have gave him a few ideas that might have helped him along the way when I was very young. Some of us have natural skills at certain things, you know. Spelling is just an absolute embarrassment for me. And my penmanship, very childlike in both of those categories. I think that's the ADD left brainer in me or something like that. But again, if you're receiving any of these, it'll be the last time I mention this one tonight, if you're receiving correspondence from a company you have an investment account with, a retirement account, IRA, Roth, anything like that, simple account, it's not a scam. There are laws pending right now to make commissions against the law, and I think in the long run will develop a healthier, safer place for all of you to invest in, where you can expect to get good advice that's designed to be good for you. And now, people have to get paid. Yes, I agree. That's true. Okay, and the doctor has to get paid, and so do I. but it's important to understand how someone gets paid. And if you understand how they get paid, you understand where the problems can be, right, where the conflicts of interest are. So if you're paying somebody, you know, 1% to manage an account for you, no matter what they put in that account, there's 330,000 different mutual funds available. And no matter which one of them I choose for you, I get paid the same way, the same amount. There's only one way for the advisor to earn more on an account. It's by growing it. So that puts the advisor and the client really on the same side of the tug of war, if you will, you know. Commissions aren't evil all by themselves. Commissions can't be evil by themselves. They're just commissions, right? Only people can be evil. Only people can be selfish, and only people can be, you know, improper that way. One of my favorite pieces of advice of late, and this is part of my gray-haired wisdom, I hope, is if you're looking for a good accountant, find a really good person who's an accountant, and you'll be happy. If you're looking for an estate planning attorney to make wills and trusts, find a good person who does that, and you'll be happy. I think it's probably more important, you know. And how do you learn who the good people are? By talking to others. Most of the tasks we all do are pretty mundane, meaning most of us are capable of doing all of them, you know, in relatively similar fashion with relatively similar success. So I think that more and more we go forward, and the more the financial world becomes commoditized, who it is going to be more and more important, because if everything has to be a portfolio today, and there are hard rules on what a portfolio is, and then you have to choose a portfolio, you have to say conservative or moderate or aggressive, it doesn't matter too much who's handling the account. Because if they're both moderate accounts, and the advisor is limited to what moderate means, you're going to get about the same return no matter who the money's with. It's not going to vary that much. Now, if you pull the gates open and give money to three different investment people and say, no rules. Do whatever you think. I wouldn't take an account that way. You have to select a risk level, and then I have to keep the portfolio within that risk category because that's what I promised you when you told me how you were comfortable or not comfortable, you know, with risk. So don't be afraid of this change. A lot of folks that are older, you know, it's brand new to them. They've never dealt with it before. But if you had old-fashioned mutual funds, A-shares are very, very popular. The total expense ratio of the A-share was probably a little more than what you're paying today in the management fee. It's just that the management fees are listed and clear and pushed out in front so you can see them, which we are all for. But some people are misinterpreting that as it's more expensive than the old way, and it really isn't. It would be 10 years ago because the cost of active management was probably double. I think most people would look at saying they needed to earn 2 or 2.5% to make it worthwhile. You'd be able to pay the overhead and all that, you know, employees, and they have to have retirement accounts and 401ks and health insurance and, you know, and a nice desk and a phone and computers and all that stuff. So if you are receiving these type of a correspondence, it is not a joke. It is not a scam. It is your advisor following the law. And I think in the long run, even those that aren't for it, I think when they look back on it in a decade, they'll be glad that it happened. Can imagine a day when it comes to retirement accounts, and that's 90% of the money that gets moved around is IRA, 401k money. No one can ever again be sold what makes the biggest commission. It would be impossible to do. And that sounds really good to me. So I think it's a good, healthy thing for our society. This is Steve Bovee on the Money Talk Show, 437-5000, 1-888-345-0790. Wow, this show goes by too fast. My producer's saying, come on, break. Okay, we'll be back. Wow, the Doobie Brothers. Thanks for that one. Hey, this is the Money Talk Show on AM 790, your station for talking business. A little bit of insurance tonight. I'll get to it. Sorry, I got distracted. It's an important topic, these new fiduciary rules, and in the spirit of the law, I personally am all for it. Life insurance. Almost always term is better. I'll leave it at that. There are times in business use, estate planning, where cash value life insurance has a good role to play, I think. But for average folks, I don't see any reason to own anything but term. Just my opinion, and I'm no insurance expert. Children. What about life insurance policies on children? I don't like them. I think it's a horrible investment. If you're the parent of a child and you have your own life insurance, inquire with your, even through your coverage at work, sometimes you can do this. Get what's called a family term rider. Super inexpensive. Every child born of the marriage is how it's worded. As long as the child's born of the marriage, you don't have to even list them on the coverage. You just have to make sure you have that rider. And it's so cheap, you won't believe it. So I don't think that life insurance policies are good things for children, myself. Here's another topic where if you have adequate savings, right, if you have a household income of $70,000 or $80,000, you should have $10,000, $20,000 in cash. You have the money to cover a child funeral if anything happens. The odds of it happening are very small. And maybe it would be better to self-insure that and not worry about it. I always had the term rider on my policy that covered my children. It was pennies, just for like $5,000, which would cover it years ago. Probably it'd be $10,000 today, you know. What if you have insurance you don't need? A client sent me a report today of a policy he wants to cancel. So I asked him to get a report from the company, and it said right on the report, if you close this policy out, you're going to get a 1099 for $41,000. That's probably a $10,000 tax bill. But the client no longer needs life insurance. Now, what does that mean? It means you got a lot of savings, right? So it's a tough one. Make sure you understand what the tax implications are. That's the most important part of the decision. Don't close out a big, fat, old policy you've had for 20 or 30 years without first understanding exactly what the tax consequences will be. And also, if you've had some major health challenges and there's a chance that you will not have great longevity, then you have to think about that too, you know. Very tough call. Automobile insurance. 90% of you, and please do this weekend, take out your automobile insurance policy at home. You all have one. And look at the coverage limits for liability. Most of them will say $100,000/$300,000. That means if you're at fault, you know, you slide on the ice, you go through a red light accidentally, however you hit somebody, Your policy will only cover $100,000 of damages. That's including repairing their car, repairing their back, the broken hip, maybe scrambled brains, you know. So $100,000 limit, that's crazy today. Your house is at risk. You could lose everything. Call your company. Ask them to tell you about a personal umbrella policy, just like the one you put up when it's raining out. I have one. I've had it for 25 years. $1 million of extra liability coverage. It's only $300 a year, folks. One of my favorite experiences is when I meet a new client in the office or a potential new one, and we're talking and going through doing financial planning, and I talk about these things with them. They tell me, well, we've got the umbrella, and I think to myself, very few people have this umbrella, and you all should, in my opinion. And I don't sell it, so you know, go see the people that sell it. Best person to talk to is whoever you have your homeowner's insurance with, the companies that issue that. But the umbrella is about $300 a year for $1 million. I've got a couple of clients that have $2 million. I should probably raise mine now that I'm thinking about it. Good idea, Steve. But it's important to think about this for a minute. Any of you that are educated out there, especially if you're in finance, $100,000 may be the liability limit for damage to one person on your auto coverage. If you have nothing else, wow. Imagine if you have a household income of $70,000 or $80,000 a year and you got financially devastated because you didn't have a $25 a month insurance. It's a very litigious world we live in. That's a fun word, huh? Litigious. Hope I said it right. Very litigious. A lot of people sue as an answer to problems. There are no more mistakes, right? You can't just make a mistake anymore. If you make a mistake, it has to have a dollar value on it. So I do believe that any of you who believe, and I'll leave this definition to you, if you have something to lose now, you have home equity, you have 401k, you have college funds, you have all that stuff, I would absolutely have an umbrella policy. At all times, about $300 a year for $1 million. Disability insurance, number one thing to focus on is the definition of disability. If you have a policy that says what Social Security says, and here's what it says, you must be unable to qualify for Social Security disability. You must be unable to perform the material duties of any and all occupations. So if you can sell pencils on the street corner, they're not going to pay you. Now, somehow, it's a long story, the legal world has figured out how to crowbar a lot of people into those benefits that don't meet that definition. That's by stretching the law and being good lawyers, I guess. And, you know, that's their job. That's their job. However, the definition is very, very difficult. Now, the definition of a disability insurance that a private policy would afford you, if you're an independent or self-employed professional, architect, accountant, CPA, me, financial planner, my definition of disability, I don't maintain my disability coverage any longer, for a long story, due to my circumstance. I don't believe that I need that any longer. But I had it for 15 to 20 years when I was building my business and building my life. And one of the rewards of being a good saver in the end is you can go without quite a bit of insurances. If I was permanently disabled right now at my age, I would just retire. If I was out for a little period of time, I could handle it without any problem, so I don't want to pay those premiums. I have liability insurance only on my cars. They're 8 years old and beautiful cars that run great. Liability insurance only because they're paid for. When my children were very young, I have 3 children, I sat them down and asked them what they thought the best car was to own. And they were maybe 7, 8, 9 years old, in that range, you know. And my oldest son, Nathan, who you hear on the program here, said, oh, it must be a Jeep, because that's what you drive, Dad. You know, he was the oldest one. He was like, rah-rah, Dad, you know. And the other was just a little, real little. And then I believe my son, Colin, said Ford, because he liked certain Fords or something. And my daughter said what her mother drove, you know, Chrysler, mom's car, that kind of car. And I just smiled, and I wasn't sure if they got it or not, but in the long run, I know they got it. And I said, well, wrong. The best car is always the one that's paid for. And I try to teach them these things at like 9, 10 years old, you know, little things that, and I won't belabor it because I know I do. If you make wrong car decisions from age 25 to 65, you can wreck your financial life. The cost of having a new car versus a 7-year-old car over a 30-year period is mind-blowing when you compare the cost of the payments, the cost of the extra insurance. You know, keep in mind, it's very nice to have a car paid for like I do right now and have just liability insurance. So cheap. Love that, you know. Doesn't mean I don't spend. I have 2 boats, actually, but they're not brand new and they don't need to be. But again, the advice is meant for those who feel that they're struggling financially. They're trying to find ways of saving money. You know, the automobiles is one of the best places to do that. Now, my father was in the car business, but I don't think I ever saw a new vehicle. I think he bought one new Ford truck for his business when I was real little. But after that, it was always an older car he got a really good deal on. And my mother never knew what she was going to drive because he was a mechanic. So he'd come home with, you know, then if he could sell a car she was driving at a profit, he'd turn it over, and next day it'd be a different one in a driveway. I can remember my mother driving a 1950 Chrysler Windsor. I can remember her driving a purple Volkswagen Bug convertible that I had to shift for her when I was 10, 12 years old because she didn't like shifting. And both those cars had standard shifts. But again, cars are the single biggest financial mistake that younger people make. If you're doing everything else well, when you're saving a lot and you've got your 401k roaring and you can afford a brand new car, okay, fine. No problem at all. But more times than I care to say, I've had people in my office over the years telling me how they can't afford this, they can't afford that, can't afford to save for college for their kids. And actually, I had tears coming down her face once, this woman. And I didn't say anything. I didn't feel comfortable. But I mean, and they both had brand new cars. $75,000 of cars in the driveway, maybe there's your college fund, you know, or some compromise is probably the best answer there. So I think the opposite is true. If you reach the time of your life where I am at, almost 60 years old, worked for 40 years, if you've been successful and you've done well, and a new car would make you happy, go right ahead and get it. But I think it's something we should kind of put off till later in life after we achieve some things. It's a healthier way of doing it. If you're younger along the way, try to spend no more than 3 months of what you earn on an automobile. This is the Money Talk Show on AM 790. Hope you have a safe weekend.